WPR State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson attended a public hearing and a press conference today at the Capitol. The hearing gave residents a chance to voice concerns about the heavy burden that student loans create for recent graduates and consider a new proposal for students to refinance their debt. The other focused on restructuring the Government Accountability Board. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Sean, some Democratic lawmakers are calling for the creation of a new agency, the Wisconsin Student Loan Refinancing Authority. What would that new authority be able to do?
I think the two biggest pieces of this bill that has been introduced by Democrats for a few sessions now is, one, it would create an income tax deduction for student loan payments, and the other piece, which is, I think, arguably bigger, is it would create this new Student Loan Refinancing Authority, a state body that would have the power to refinance loans, and it's being sold as a body that would refinance those loans at lower rates. The argument being this would be an example where state government can step in and help people, a growing number of people who have a real problem and that's taking money out of their pockets that they could be spending on something else.
Now, as I understand it, this is not the first time that this bill has been making the rounds. What's new this time?
It's not the first time that it's been making the rounds. It has for a couple sessions, even though Republicans are in complete control of government. It has gotten a public hearing now for a couple sessions. So I think that's indicative of, the fact that, it is a bipartisan problem that, people, students, as they enter the working world, are saddled with more and more debt. So, it's a little unusual to see a Democratic bill come up in a hearing like this, but it's not something that was met exactly with with fierce opposition in the committee hearing room, even though it probably has no chance of passing the legislature this session.
I'm sorry, you said it did meet with fierce opposition or
did not? I would say it was pretty receptive. Lawmakers were in and out, and it kind of depends on the lawmakers who were in the room, but typically, the people who come up and testify at these things are students who have some pretty harrowing stories of tens of thousands of dollars of debt. They feel like they did everything they should. They went, they worked a job or two jobs in college. Their parents paid for part of college. They got all the loans they could. They still have all this debt. And so what lawmakers are being presented here is a real problem, a tangible problem. And so the question then for them is this something we can do?
Well, given what you said, is it possible that this is a bill that could pick up some bipartisan support?
It hasn't yet. I think there's a couple things that make it difficult to pass. One is when you're talking about a tax deduction to cover student loan payments, the fiscal note or the estimated fiscal impact on that projected by the State Department of Revenue is $110,000, roughly $109,000 in the next budget. So, that is something that the state could, if it wanted to, prioritize. In the grand scheme of a $70+ billion budget, $110,000 is money you could come up with if you wanted to do that piece of the bill. I think the more difficult piece is creating an agency that has the power to refinance these loans at lower rates, because the way it would work is it would issue bonds in order to refinance these loans. And if it can't issue those bonds at low rates, it's going to be hard for them to refinance these loans at lower rates. So that's kind of just the challenge that you can't get around exactly.
Now, this is something, an idea that isn't just coming out of Wisconsin. This is something that's been kicked around conversations at the national level, too. But if passed, it sounds like this would make Wisconsin a national leader in student debt refinancing. Do you think that that's something that Wisconsin, given the hurdles, would be interested in doing?
I'm not sure that majority Republicans are interested in doing that, because at least from what they've said, they don't feel like that financing piece of it can work. It's not something you hear them talking about. It's definitely something that Democrats are happy to talk about. They feel like this is a growing constituency out there. Students who are saddled with huge debt, You know, this college debt may have always been an issue that people had to deal with, but it's a bigger and bigger issue as college gets more and more expensive. And Democrats, and particularly the Democratic group, One Wisconsin Now, are arguing that this is essentially, it's sort of a crisis that threatens the American dream, that you have, you know, college becoming something that is really only affordable by the wealthy, unless you go to school and you take on all this debt, and then you enter the workforce, and you have to deal with, you know, mountains of debt before you can start to buy other stuff, like a house, for example.
Sean, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're welcome.
We'll talk to you a bit later. We're talking with Sean Johnson right now. He's been giving us a sense of what happened at a public hearing today and about plans to deal with student loan debt in Wisconsin. WPR State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson stays with us now. He's covered two different public hearings today, and he's joining us now to talk about the second of these, a move to restructure the Government Accountability Board. Sean, welcome back.
Hey.
And so a busy day for you up at the Capitol, and we're going to talk about the Government Accountability Board next, the GAB. Tell us about this new idea from Republicans to overhaul the GAB.
Okay, so just to step back a little bit, the Government Accountability Board, for anybody who's unfamiliar, is this agency that was created in 2007 to replace the old Ethics and Elections Boards. And this was, you know, a bipartisan creation. Almost all the members of the legislature voted for it back then. It's run by six nonpartisan judges who ultimately have the final call on any decisions made by staff in running this agency. So Republicans have been pretty critical of the GAB, especially since you know, its role has come out kind of bit by bit in the John Doe investigation of Governor Scott Walker's campaign and conservative groups. And so what they unveiled today is a plan that would break up the GAB, scrap that model of nonpartisan judges to run the GAB, and basically go back to a model that was very similar to what the Government Accountability Board replaced. You have an ethics commission, you'd have an elections commission, they would be staffed by partisan appointees, and the agencies would have less power or less money to investigate potential wrongdoing of elected officials.
So, Sean, who's the author of this bill and who's supporting it?
A lot of Republicans are supporting it. The lead author in the state assembly is Representative Dean Knutson of Hudson, but he was joined at this press conference by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who has been among the most outspokenly critical members of the legislature when it comes to the Government Accountability Board. The bill is already, it already has the verbal backing of Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and the senator who chairs the Elections Committee in the Senate. So this is one of those that you've known was kind of in the works for a while. It's formally coming out here today, and this is one where it feels like Republicans are going to move pretty fast.
So it sounds like this one has a lot of power behind it already. And going back to that model that it replaced from 2007, what was the reasoning there for getting rid of it in the first place? And that had bipartisan support to form the GAB. But to look back a little further at the history, why did the legislature decide to scrap that?
Yeah, you had a couple things driving the creation of the Government Accountability Board in 2007. One, it was something that advocacy groups like Common Cause and the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign had been pushing for a while, especially because back then there was people still remembered and still were talking about the legislative caucus scandal in Wisconsin, where employees of the legislature, staff, were doing campaign work on state time. And legislative leaders went to jail for this. And these groups, Common Cause, Democracy Campaign, and others, said that part of the reason it got to that point was because you had an ethics board and an elections board that were toothless, that because they were staffed by these partisan appointees, they didn't really do anything when it came to enforcing the law. So that was part of the reason, part of the push behind creating the Government Accountability Board. The other part was, at the time, Republicans felt like they were on the downside of a pretty big decision by the elections board at the time, where they felt it undercut then gubernatorial candidate and congressman Mark Green regarding what he could do with his congressional campaign accounts. That was, you know, it was viewed as a big win for Democrats. It caught Republicans flat-footed. And so they said, okay, we're going to sign on to this, and we're going to have this board be as nonpartisan as possible. The thing is, a lot of the legislators who are working on this bill now and who are serving the legislature did not serve during that time, did not take a vote on the Government Accountability Board in 2007. And so they're not viewing the world through that prism.
Now, critics of this move to overhaul the Government Accountability Board have said that kind of why would you do this? The GAB is a national leader in state elections. How is it, do you think, seen elsewhere in the country?
Yeah, elsewhere in the country, especially by academics or, you know, groups that study elections or, you know, study election laws and election governance in the state, they do look at the Government Accountability Board as a model. And they wonder why more states don't follow it. They like it. They feel like the nonpartisan model is something that other states should aspire to. Republicans in Wisconsin view it much differently, and they feel like some of the decisions specifically mentioned today by Dean Knutson, decisions involving the recall campaign and decisions involving decisions by staff and redesigning the ballots in the last election cycle, they say those were tilted against Republicans, and they felt like those decisions were driven by staff at the Government Accountability Board, and they felt like the judges who had the final say in those decisions were kind of, because they're judges and not, you know, they didn't have a background in running political campaigns, they were sort of out of their element. So they said this new board is going to be staffed by, you know, more people with more experience in running elections, you know, former clerks, for example.
And Sean, just super briefly before we let you go, this week the judge who's the current chair of the GAB was on Central Time. He said that making big changes this close to the 2016 presidential elections would be a bad decision. Given what you know, is that plea likely to be heard?
I don't think it's going to be heard, but he was there to make the plea again in person today at the press conference, said that this is a bad time to make these decisions. You should observe the process from the inside first before you upend what has been a national model in election and ethics laws.
Sean, thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome.
That was Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol reporter.
The Milwaukee County Court is hearing an unusual gun case this week. Two police officers were shot in 2009. The firearm had been purchased at a local gun store, then handed off by the purchaser to the perpetrator. The officers who survived the shootings are now suing the company Badger Guns.
The issue of liability for gun manufacturers and retail providers doesn't often make it to the courts, and national experts say they have their eyes on this Wisconsin case as a possible precedent in future lawsuits.
John Diedrich joins us now. He covers crime and guns for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is covering this trial. John, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Sure.
Well, give us the backstory on this case, a little more detail. What happened here?
Well, so this is the case of two Milwaukee police officers who were shot in 2009 on the south side of Milwaukee. As we came to find out later, the firearm that was used to shoot them had been purchased a month earlier by a straw buyer. That's somebody who's not buying the gun for himself, but for somebody who's not able to legally buy the gun themselves. Those two officers were among six who were wounded with guns that were sold by Badger Guns or Badger Outdoors over a 20-month period. And those two officers have sued Badger Guns, Badger Outdoors, and their owners, claiming negligence. And as you say, it's an unusual case to come to court because there's a federal law that passed 10 years ago that holds gun stores largely immune from such lawsuits.
But the idea here that the plaintiffs are making the case is that the gun store was negligent, extremely negligent in allowing straw purchases, again, a second party buying a gun and handing it off. So how are they making that claim of negligence here?
Well, so the law says that it protects gun stores involved in lawful commerce. And so the argument of the lawyers and for the police officers is that this was not lawful commerce, that in effect it was an illegal sale, that it was a straw purchase, violation of law, and that the store knew or should have known that they were breaking federal law and allowed it to go on anyway. So it's a big hurdle to clear. It's not insurmountable, or it wouldn't be in court here, but it is significant in that this is only the second such case to come to trial nationwide since the law passed in 2005.
As I understand it, in the trial, there's been testimony from people involved in the purchase and even some video of the purchase taking place. So what kind of things that happened that people are saying, hey, there should have been red flags, this business should have known this was a straw purchase?
Well, so the buyer comes in, Jacob Collins, and the person who's actually directing Collins to get the gun, Julius Burton, is also in the store. So that's a flag right away. Somebody comes in for a transaction, but he's not at the counter, but he's pointing out the gun at one point. It's not clear whether the clerk saw that or not. He says, that's the one I want. It's unclear whether the clerk saw it, but the experts that we've spoken to in the past, so, you know, just the fact that you have somebody who's sort of in the store and their presence is not explained is a flag. Then the buyer, Jacob Collins, marks at one point on the form that he is the buyer, the true buyer, buying it for himself, and then he marks elsewhere on the form that he's not the buyer. And, you know, that would be a red flag. The gun store says, well, he was just confused. He has trouble reading, so forth. But again, another opportunity to ask a question. Then at the time that they go to settle the transaction, Collins doesn't have enough money. So he and the true buyer, Julius Burton, leave the store, get more cash, and Collins comes back in to pay for the rest of the gun. So that's what the officer's attorney says, you know, telltale signs of a straw sale.
And you reported that, I think it was, I forget which of the two, Collins testified in this trial and said, hey, Badger Guns, everybody knew this was a go-to place to get guns. Can you tell us more about that testimony?
Well, this came actually from Burton himself.
Oh, from the perpetrator himself.
Yeah, that's right. He's serving an 80-year prison term. He's in Green Bay Correctional and testified in a recorded deposition today. And he said, that it was just known to him. He couldn't specifically say who told him that, but that everybody knew that Badger was the place to come, and that he had heard, you know, that. And so he said, well, you know, I'll go there. You know, what's interesting is that there are sort of quirks in the law, and he alluded to that today. I mean, he was not able to buy this gun because he's 18, from a gun store, a handgun. However, he could have gone to a gun show and bought the gun legally, or bought it, you know, from somebody else legally. 18-year-olds are allowed to buy it. It's just one of the quirks or loopholes, if you will, of the law. But he knew he couldn't buy a gun, a handgun, that is, as somebody who's not 21. And so, and he knew Badger Guns, from what he had heard, was the place to come and get such a firearm.
Talking to John Diedrich from the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel about this high-profile case getting a lot of national attention in Milwaukee County about liability for a gun store and a gun that was purchased by a straw buyer, given to someone else who then used it in the shooting of two police officers. Now, I got to ask, John, I mean, this is the person who shot those officers. They're presumably there, too, because they're the plaintiffs in this case. What was the mood like in the courtroom, people in this horrible story?
Well, it's been very tense at times. We just had testimony from Graham Kunich, the second officer. He and Brian Norberg were both shot, and it was very quiet in the courtroom as Officer Kunich, who's since left the department, testified. He lost his eye on the left side, and really it was a heroic effort by the folks at Frater in the medical college to save his life. But he's had brain damage, and they've talked about how he's really changed. His mood has changed, and he's more hair trigger in his mood and so forth. And just describing the shooting, both of them, it's, you know, been very, very tense and sometimes dramatic testimony.
And the owner of Badger Guns also testified. What did the court hear from him?
Well, so what he said is they had, you know, that so there are two different owners who testified, and that's part of the claims of the officers as well, is that essentially they conspired together to defeat an effort by federal regulators to possibly close the store. That was contemplated in 2006, 2007. They testified basically that they had taken measures, that they have followed the rules as they were laid out by federal regulators, and that they, you know, had tried to prevent these sales, and that they essentially are not responsible for what happens to the guns when they leave the store, but that they took due diligence to take safeguards to make sure that they weren't conducting any illegal sales.
Now, obviously, in this case, the officers have a lot at stake. The gun store owner and previous owner have a lot at stake. Bigger picture, you mentioned the federal law making it difficult to sue a gun store owner, a gun manufacturer, for damages. Is this being looked at as a precedent if it keeps going forward in other cases, maybe in the state or around the country?
Well, certainly being watched. It was a case that was at one time the Brady Center was involved in this case, and there's a second suit also involving Milwaukee police officers that's scheduled to go to trial next year. We'll see if it does. But the first case, as I mentioned, this is the second. The first was in Alaska, and the gun store won in that case. So we'll see what happens here, though. The suspicion is, depending on the outcome, that there will likely be an appeal. These kinds of cases are, you know, aren't settled usually at this level. But it's certainly being watched, especially to see how the arguments that have been successful here, how could they be translated elsewhere. There's a lawsuit against the gun store that sold the firearm in the Newtown shooting, for instance, that has not gone to trial yet. But every case is a little bit different, but some of the same issues, if they are successful here, may end up showing up in other jurisdictions.
A lot of key parts of the story have already testified, the perpetrator, at least one of the officers, the gun store owner. What's the timeline now? How long are we expected to be hearing testimony before the jury goes behind closed doors?
Well, it's scheduled to be a three-week trial. We're at about a little over two and a half weeks right now. The defense has yet to go and present their case, but that's always a shorter side than the plaintiff's case, at least typically. So we haven't heard from any defense witnesses at this point. But the major witnesses for the plaintiffs have testified. I'm sure we'll hear some more testimony tomorrow from the plaintiff's side, and then later this week it may switch to the defendant. And then early next week is, I think, where this may be moving to closing arguments, though the schedule is yet to be fully fleshed out by the court.
And what is the status of the store itself, Badger Guns, these days? Are they still open for business? Have they done things in accordance with what the ATF was looking for?
Well, the gun store did close. At least the current license holder that sold the gun that wounded these two police officers, ATF revoked their license in 2011. And what happened then is the brother of the owner pulled the new license and opened the operation. Now, we haven't heard of any cases like this resulting from sales by that store. But essentially, the operation has moved from one family member to another and now to a third family member.
John, thanks a lot for sharing your coverage of this with us today.
Thanks so much.
That's John Diedrich. He's a reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us to talk about the ongoing Badger Guns trial in Milwaukee County.